Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Game's premier podcasting duo. My name is JW Kriwall, and I say duo today because we are without Riley. It's me and Andrew Mahone on the cast today. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm chilling, man. I'm doing great. Just tested some Paradox Rift on stream with Jesse, so that was a lot of fun. And I'm doing some gym leader challenge testing tomorrow. So back-to-back tabletop days on stream. Tabletop's the most fun content to produce for me. So I'm having a blast with that. And, of course, just got back from Peoria, which you were able to finish in the top four of. So major congratulations are in store for you, sir.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, we'll be talking about that on the cast. I mean, it's fine to, you know, I felt like last season I was sitting on the sidelines watching, you know, you and Riley had some pretty deep runs. Nothing comparable, but, you know, some top eights, top 16s. You know, no hardware to speak of. But
yeah, I did see that you're so proud. You tweeted out a picture of your hardware with almost no context, I think, just a flex.
Just engagement, just for the engagement. And it did all right. It did all right. So, yeah, no, but I felt like last year you guys were, you know, I was the one kind of being the cheerleader and really, you know, hey, good luck in the, you know, winning in for top eight or, you know, best of luck in the final set, best of luck in day two. You know, it really felt like that. I wasn't disappointed necessarily in my performance last year. I felt like I performed really well. I was day twoing a lot of regionals, but I just never had those spikes that I felt like some of the other members of our team had. So it was good to validate that I'm not washed and get a nice finish.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is playing the Pokemon TCG, I mean, it does require a lot of kind of faith and perseverance. You have to believe that you're playing at the level that is required to do well in order to do well. I mean, you have to continue to believe that you're at that level, even if things just aren't buffing out. There's a lot of things that need to go right in order to produce a tournament spike. And even, you know, I mean, I had a very solid season last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seemed like top 32s and top 16s were just coming easily,
right,
and just whatever. Right. And that's, that is, you know, if you take a look at my last two regional performances, you realize like those are not to be taken for granted.
No, right? Absolutely not. And, you know, and it's fun to like, yeah, kind of flex a little bit, right? It's kind of fun to have that, to bask, but just as easily the next tournament that I go to, it could be a very much, you know, a 4-3 flame out or 0-3 drop, you know, that kind of situation where it's just doesn't go right, hit bad matchups, and ultimately find myself on the outside looking in. So I'm really happy that this tournament went the way it did. You spoke a lot about luck, and we have a lot to talk about in that regard, especially as it pertains to a deck list. That is one of the primary questions. I posted on Twitter a picture of the deck list, and I said, don't ask questions. And naturally, I got a handful of DMs saying, hey, this deck list only has 58 cards. What's the deal with that? And I assure you, dear listener, that will all be answered by the end of this podcast.
Yeah. Now, before we get into the tournament run, obviously, I want to talk to you about your tournament run. We've got the entire cast to talk about that, but I do kind of want to set the stage.
Yes,
because I think more.
Mm-hmm, yep, I think a lot of people want to know. Kind of, you know, the group had come to a consensus on Maridon heading into this tournament, and that
even
you
more
know,
than that.
Sure,
even more. I mean, because even talking about like, I mean, I'm just so happy for you getting the finish. But there's more to talk about when it comes to you, and I think maybe I'm in a better position to be able to kind of point things out that might be interesting to people that they might not know about you as a tournament competitor, right? You're a two-time regional champion.
That's true.
you're a zero-time regional top eight or top four finisher.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I have a modern day. That might be true if you're okay. Talking about modern day Limitless.
Not that
but I have
on Limitless.
I okay. have. This would have been my sixth regional top eight. So this is a fun fact.
Your sixth.
You want to hear another fun fact?
I don't even know that about you. I didn't know you had ever finished in a regional top without winning.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there's a few. So there's, let's see. So the first regional I ever attended, that was a top eight finish. I finished in the top eight. I was actually one bench spot away from top four. But that was fun. That was 2011. That was my second official tournament ever. Archetype that I created, Magnezone Vileplume, from Heartgold Soul Silver, so 2011, and yeah, that was a fun tournament. Second tournament ever, first regional, and that was a really funny tournament, just all the way. Oh, and that was the tournament they had bracket style.
Oh yeah, they did.
So
my first regional top eight was also bracket style. I'm in top 16. One top 16, I'm in top eight.
Yeah, exactly.
That was my first regional top eight too. I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Over 13.
That's right. So that was my first one, and then I had another one. I had the 2013-2014 win, and then I had another one in the dual format. 2014, 2015, I think it was like the year after. And I lost in top eight on a bad misplay, but it was to a really good friend. And I could have like I announced the wrong attack, but I could have just been like, oh, you know, no, I didn't. Yeah, right. I could have really like, he held me to it, which is fair. But like, I also could have like been, you know, really annoying back. But that's a story for another time.
There was like no money on the line back then.
There was no money on the line. There was like barely a judge watching our match. It was bad.
When I won my regional in 2015, I got 3 booster boxes, a Primal Clash, a pat on the back, and a $200 Visa gift card.
That's right, man. Yep. How far we've come. And then there was obviously the other win in Richmond. And then I had a special event top four.
Oh,
In Barcelona.
Okay.
And then, and then this one. Wait, so that's 5, I guess. Yeah. So anyway,
your first regional, not top eight non-win in the modern era.
Sure. You could say that. That's fine.
Still a big finish. And I think, you know, you're a very competitive player. You're a very successful player. You're someone who, you know, we've been testing together the lion's share of my competitive career for sure. And so like we've kind of, you know, jockeyed back and forth with various performances and things like that. And last season, you know, you were like, you were fired up at NAIC and you're like, you know, we are not getting the finishes that we need as a squad. And me and Riley look at each other like, we're doing just fine, bud.
Yeah, well, and that's the funny thing too, right? And again, it comes back to that where I was talking earlier in the cast, where it's like I felt like I was on the outside looking in, and I was so happy for you guys because that's all I want to see is my friends do well. But at the same time, you know how much luck goes into a deep tournament run, and it's matchup luck, and it's in-game luck, and you know it's metagame luck. Like it's just all these things that come together to culminate in a deep tournament run, and I just was never quite getting there. I was maybe having a solid day one performance and I was flopping in day two, or like barely squeaking into day two. And you just know how hard it is now when you're going 6-2-1 in day one to have that deep run that you want in day two. So it was just a lot of that for me last season. And again, nothing that I felt like, you know, my play was bad, but you know, maybe we could have made better deck choices. Maybe there were some things where I just hit some bad matchups in certain tournaments and, yeah, so I was very, very happy for you guys last year, but now I feel really good about it. The other thing too is I was really fired up last year at NAIC where I was saying, like, yeah, we gotta, you know, what are we doing? We gotta do better. We gotta be, you know, test more and put more effort into this. And it's kind of funny because Jesse and I have actually like done a lot of, yeah, we've been doing a lot of, you know, and it's like, I think the results have... have really panned out for us in particular. Yeah. And we've been going back and forth, and it's still not as much as I would like to do. Just, I'm a dad.
Life comes up, man.
I got other things to do, but you know, I'm trying as much as I can to jockey for that, you know, time in my life to dedicate to, you know, really honing in on certain matchups, trying to figure out a good list, and just really feeling confident. So far this season, that's really paid off. I've had the top four in this last regional, and then, you know, a day two performance in Pittsburgh. And that's, I mean, you look at the season and 600 points in North America, like I'm not even, these are my two performances this season. These are the two tournaments that I've gone to outside of a couple league challenges that I flamed out of. And I'm not even a third of the way there in terms of the point total needed for world. So it's like, I have to make the most of these tournaments. And so far it's panned out.
Exactly. And I think that it's so important also, the team aspect of playing the Pokemon TCG, and we see how valuable that is now. I mean, especially as adults with jobs and lives, you know, you've got your second child on the way, where, you know, adults with full-time jobs and responsibilities. And that's why the team aspect, I feel like, is so important, because we can really pick up where other team members aren't maybe able to do things on certain weeks or whatever, you know, and just able to kind of all lift each other up towards success. I mean, last year it felt like Riley and I were really carrying the torch, you know. Now it's you and Jesse are the ones who are just hammering the finishes home. But like, you know, we're all a unit and working together and seeing that success come out. I mean, I can't express how proud I am to be a part of this group of players and to be associated with this group of players, and to see all of us get to succeed in various ways has been a real joy for me. And even having Jesse on stream, you know, and having him be able to bask in his success, you know, that man was just hoping for a top 16, you know, and then gets like, nobody would have told you that he was going to be the only player to top eight both North American regionals.
Nope.
Not a single soul.
No, but I mean, you know, and that's it too. It's like, it couldn't happen to better guys, you know. Just, we're just some of the best guys in the game. And it just, you know, it's just really good to see, right?
So true. So true, bestie. So true. So, it's obviously, it's been a great season for our squad so far. Jesse was, you know, chatting me up before stream today and was like, you know, I'm so excited, but I'm just bummed that you can't get it. You haven't been getting a piece of the pie. I'm like, brother, it's two events. I just top 32'd worlds. What are you talking about? Like,
yeah. And it comes,
I remember that. Do you not?
It comes in waves. It comes in waves. And that's the thing, is like, we all have like low points, you know. Yeah. Even the best players just don't perform every single tournament. And that's just the way of the game. And so, you know, that would be some.
You need proof of that. Look at it. I mean, Azul did not convert either of those first two regionals either, right?
Yeah, and he's
the best player in North America,
right? No, and he's not sweating it, right? And yeah, you know, he's not sweating it, right? Because I think a lot of the top players in the game, they take a very long form approach to the game, and that's, I think, why you're seeing more players play the same decks over and over and over again, is because they say, okay, well, my variance in the first tournament was not particularly good, so I'm going to roll it back in the second tournament, I'm going to roll it back in the third tournament, and then, you know, over the course of a quarter or half a season or a season, if I'm playing a similar archetype, like, I should be getting the results that I know I deserve. So he's not sweating it, you know. I know you're not sweating it, and we'll get back on the horse.
It takes a lot of mental fortitude. I mean, as I was saying, it takes a lot of mental fortitude to play this game over the course of a long time. Being a career Pokemon player, which I think we qualify as now, just someone who is just like, yep, season in, season out, we're here. It takes a lot of mental fortitude. It takes that short-term memory in certain situations where you have to just kind of not sweat the small stuff and kind of be able to brush off, you know, some bad beats, and then just, you know, carry on as if nothing happened to the next. But then you also need long-term memory in some situations where when you're fishing for proof that you still got it, you're like, ah, well, you know, remember that? Yeah, I can still do that.
Right. Yeah. And that, so, and that's like, and this was a great, you know, example for me, right? Because it gives me just a little bit of like, and it encourages my spouse, like, hey, honey, I just won $5,000. Like, you know, hey, maybe this gets me another, you know, season, right? Like, there's that encouragement too. That's really exactly. Nice as well.
It really is. So, I think that's, you know, all of that feels like that is kind of the context of these back-to-back finishes for our team. You know, Jesse's finalist appearance, yeah, with Maridon at Pittsburgh, you and Riley both finishing in day two of Pittsburgh as well. And then, this is one of the only times we've had two members of our squad finish in top eight at the same time. We have definitely had it happen before. We had a very strong performance with the Rowlett and Alone executive deck back in the 2020 season, with you and Zeely in top eight, me at like 10th place, Brady, 30, you know, top 32. I mean, we were all right there. But this definitely feels like one of those times where our team is just really locked in and aligned. And
another funny story, speaking of Zeely, I go to sit down for my round eight at 6-1, and who sits next to me but Michael Zeely. I hadn't seen him the entire tournament. I didn't know if he was, because normally he, you know, decides, you know, between vending or playing, and it feels like 50-50 at times. I had no idea he was even at the event, and he sits down next to me, and he's like, and I'm like, hey man, what are you doing here? Like, I thought he was just playing a prank on me. And he's like, yeah, I'm 6-1. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah,
where were you the entire day? So Zeely got top 64 as well. So like, again, like another, you know, of the four players that attended the event with roughly the same list. And again, we'll talk about lists, but of the four players, three of us were day two and then two of us were in top eight. That's as good of a result as you could expect collectively from any testing group. So
absolutely. To see, you know, to close out day one and have you guys at 7-2, 8-1, and 8-1, respectively, Zeely at 7-2, and both you and Jesse at 8-1 was absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, to have three players at that high of a point threshold was absolutely nuts. So now that we've kind of set the stage for the tournament, I'll kind of pass it over to you. Explain to the viewers and the listeners, Why do we settle on Maridon? What is it about Maridon that makes it an attractive tournament deck? And what did we do this time that was different than Pittsburgh?
So I think the thing that makes Maridon a good deck, we've talked about this, but it bears repeating, especially if maybe you're a first-time listener, is, and this is the thing that also makes Maridon, gives Maridon a stigma in a lot of players' minds.
It has one.
It definitely has a stigma and of being kind of you know, underpowered or cheap in some way, or just not a viable long-term strategy. But that is just, you know, Maridon is going to play the game, I would say 85% of the time, 90% of the time, you're going to get that, you know, turn one, turn two attack. And you just put a lot of pressure on the opponent. And sometimes they can deal with it, or sometimes the matchup is, you know, bad enough that they just overcome it, you know, in other ways. But there's that stigma there where it's like, oh, you're just playing a really quick, fast attack deck that doesn't have any substance to it. And I think on the one hand, that's somewhat true. Like, I think of all the decks that I've ever played in my time in the game, like, is Maridon the most skill intensive? No, but at the same time, you are just asking a lot of questions of your opponent and you're putting on a lot of early pressure. And if you play it well, and if you are a good player, you can actually come into situations where you are outplaying your opponent because you're controlling the board state in a way that makes it very difficult for them to respond to. So, you know, with that in mind, I was really trying to test heading into this event DTE Mew, because I felt like DTE Mew was in a good spot. I didn't feel like Spirit Tomb was that realistic. You saw the Curitiba finishes where Charizard had five of the top eight. And I said, no one would be crazy enough to bring Mew to this event. And so Jesse and I had been testing a lot of DTE Mew into Charizard. And with none of the cool techs that I had seen from other players, like the Helix Fossil or the Luxray V to try to disrupt the hand, we didn't really have any of that. It's just pretty much basic and then with some grabbers. But ultimately what we found is that we could work really hard with the DTMU and outplay our opponent for 70% of the game, and then they get a rare candy Charizard and, you know, a couple attachments like at any point, and you basically instantly lose. And it just felt so bad to play into that matchup. And we figured, okay, Charizard's going to be a top three deck, and if it performs like even a quarter as well as it did in Brazil, then that's just not going to be a metagame that we would like to run the list for DTMU that we had into that buzzsaw of Charizard that we expected. And I think ultimately it was a good call. We couldn't come up with those techs that we needed to overcome Charizard. So if we were to play DTMU, I mean, Charizard was 15% of the field. It was the number one deck. We were kind of thinking, you know, maybe like 10 to 14%, but like 15% of the day one field was Charizard. So I think ultimately a good call for us in the end, just again, without any kind of tech. So settled on Maridon, felt pretty good about that. We were deciding between path and no path, and I think Charizard really played a factor in deciding the path version, because I think with path, you know, you look at the ability decks that you would want path against, and primarily it's Charizard. I think secondarily it's like, oh, you want path against Mew, but ironically path Maridon is worse into Mew than no path Maridon, because you don't get access to the Drapion, and the Mew decks often have a counter. Yeah, they'll path you, or they'll have a counter or something like that. Yeah. And then another matchup that we preferred to have path into was Turbo Lost Box, because sometimes there are situations where, you know, against the Turbo Lost Box player, if you can go and get your path early, you can shut down their Greninja, and that can really stymie their draw. And so we were saying, okay, Turbo Lost Box seems like a good play. Charizard seems like a good play. Path ultimately is going to be where we land on. And so with that in mind, we crafted a list that was a little bit different from things that we had played before. At Worlds, we had played one Arvin, and that's kind of a good card. Like, I'm warming up. Like, I really wasn't super hype on the one Arvin at Worlds. It felt like a vestige of a list that had Lumineon in it. And then we cut the Lumineon from the Worlds list, and then it was just like, okay, we have one Arvin, I guess, because we have an open slot.
You see it, like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's good when you see it. Yeah, right. Yeah, it can't hurt. Exactly. But with two Arvin in the list, it really felt nice, because there are just turns against a lot of decks where you don't need to do all that much. You just need to get a tool down, you know, find another generator or an Ultra Ball or something like that, and you can save that Iono for the next turn, or you can save that research for the next turn, or the boss for the next turn. So we settled on two Arvin. That was kind of a big differentiating factor of the list that we played. And then we had three Path on the list. I know you really wanted four. I was a little cool on the four. Like, I think you could go to three, and I think that
it's fine.
You know, yeah, it's fine. I think three versus four is pretty much negligible. And that opened up some room for some other stuff. So we played a couple of Judge, and you all played two Iono. I ended up cutting one Iono for a Mew EX. And I'll tell you what, why I cut it for the Mew EX. And I didn't tell you guys that I was going to play the Mew EX. But no, I was thinking
JW secret sauce the night before everybody decides on the list. JW goes back and he's lying in bed staring at the ceiling like, I just gotta be different.
Well, you know what's funny is that's kind of exactly how it was. Like, I woke up at like five in the morning, and I'm just like sitting there trying to figure it out. And so anyway, I came up with the Mew, and the idea was, it's a great first turn starter. Like, anytime you start the Flying Peak, you're like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. So it's another, like, really good starter, for one. It has that draw, which, I mean, frankly, those two reasons alone are, like, cool. Like, I could see this being, like, an inclusion. And I did use Restart for, that's the ability on Mew EX. I did use Restart meaningfully, like, a number of times throughout the tournament. Like, it's never bad to have that additional draw. And if you get it down early, that's cool. Or if you just need that extra dig at the end of the game, then it's cool. And then the third reason that I came up with, is just for certain matchups. So like I was worried about, for no real reason, but I was a little bit worried about Mimikyu. So Mimikyu has that safeguard ability. I mean, you could attack with the Zapdos, but I'm like, that's one thing. And then there's also...
What about the second Mimikyu, man?
Yeah, what about the second Mimikyu? That's true. I mean, it's only doing 70 damage, so theoretically you could go through two Mimikyu with one Zapdos. But the other matchup that I was really worried about that I thought could be a really popular matchup and that I didn't want to... that I wanted to improve my odds against was Urshifu and Inteleon. And I did end up playing a couple of Urshifu and Inteleon decks in day one, funnily enough. But also ironically enough is I didn't attack with Mew in those matchups. So I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. I think I would ultimately end up cutting the Mew if I were to play this list. But, you know, maybe we can talk about that at the end. And then, yeah, I think there's the deck list story comes into play. But I think we should go over day one and day two matchups before getting into top eight, where we can reveal the issue with the deck list.
The twist.
The twist. Yeah. Yes. A big twist.
Big twist.
Yes, big twist. So
we all decided we wanted to play Mariodon. I think, I mean, at this point, are we being typecast as a group? I feel like there's, you know, certain testing groups all kind of like have their niche. They have their deck. I mean, Azul's group was, they were on Lost Box for like a really long time. Tord is going to play Gardevoir. We pretty much all know that, you know? And at this point, it's just like, and we see that with a lot of testing groups. They just kind of really hone in on their deck and they just feel like they figure out the best way to play the deck
at
the upcoming event. But, you know, with archetypes that are just successful. And that's a funny thing about this format is that it is kind of open enough that you can just jam the deck that you like the best. And if you know it back and forth, that's going to do you a lot of favors in the games. And then there's just the RNG factor as well. So, like, whatever, dude, you got to run the matchup roulette anyway. So you might as well just pick your favorite.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I mean, it's, I mean, think of another deck outside of maybe Kyogre Lost Box that has seen the amount of success that Mariodon has both here in the States and in Japan. I mean, it's, you know, recently post Worlds has been doing really well in Japan.
Yeah.
Obviously we know about Jesse's two top eights, my top four. Like, I really don't think, I think you'd be hard pressed to find in tournament play with a person that is competent with the deck, like a better, more consistently performing archetype.
And it's crazy. I mean, you were saying it's got this stigma against it. And I think that it's because it's a red deck, right? I mean, when you're talking about Magic the Gathering, red decks are decks that just are low to the ground and they go fast, right? And there's not a lot of like crazy combos to them or anything like that. They just are there to try and race the opponent off the board, and that's the strategy. But that is a valid strategy, and it is in trading card games. It is a very valid strategy, and it's one that I feel like people just discount for whatever reason, you know, with Mariodon. I don't know what it is. It's got like low to the ground, fast attacks. It's got beefy HP, and it's got late game sweep potential with like late game one hit KO potential. I feel like it really does have, it has a lot of versatility to it. But anyways, let's talk about your day one Swiss run. You finished with a record of 8-1. How did you get there?
Absolutely. It was, I don't want to be like, if you're one of my day one opponents, listening to this,
don't say it.
I'm going to use coded language,
I know,
to make sure that it's never attached to any specific round. But on the whole, my day one opponents in this tournament were the worst quality of player that I have played at a regional. And
you said it.
I mean, and again, I'm going to use that coded language. So I'm not going to talk about any matchup in particular or any,
I plan on putting this on my YouTube channel.
Yes, I do. I mean, I have to say it because that is very important to this whole arc, right? Because to finish 8-1 is like that's a great thing. And that sets you up really well for a solid finish overall. But it was painful playing these matchups, because while there were certain like times where I kind of knew I was going to win, my opponents were making just these very blatant, like I just knew, like there was nothing they could have in their hand that would make this play reasonable. There was nothing that their archetype played, like there was nothing that their deck played that was like, oh yeah, this could be a good play because they have this card. And like there were just these obvious misplays from a number of my opponents, not everyone. So if you were one of my opponents, you know, count yourself in the not everyone, unless you know you misplayed, in which case
it might not have been you.
In which case I am talking about you. Yeah. So, I mean, it was like really bizarre. It was really bizarre because, you know, even.
God, like, I wish that were me.
No, I mean, no, for real. Like we talk about luck going into tournaments, and my day one field was some of the weakest competition that I have had. I don't know what it is, but it was, you know, very much like they were making blatant misplays, and I, you know, pretty much swept through again, outside of a few players that were very tight and very good, just very average at best play.
I think that there's something really important to kind of recognize about like the modern tournament scene and the modern tournament structure is that it's bigger than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just bigger than it's ever been. Pokemon TCG is bigger than it's ever been. Competition's bigger than it's ever been. And there is, where are those people coming from? Well, they're not longtime players. There is a lot of new players in the scene, which is incredible.
And welcome
and amazing.
Yes. Happy to have you.
Yes.
Play me in day one or day two.
Dang it.
No, I'm just kidding.
But like when, and that's the amazing thing is that like, yeah. Okay, this tournament might have 1900 players at it. That is not 1900 good players. That, you know, yeah. You're going to have a lot of new players in that field because we've never had 1900 player tournaments for years and years. So you're talking about the amount of people that have years of experience in the field are a much smaller amount. Yeah. And in ways like that, for longtime players like us who have, you know, been through the game for a long time, I mean, if you're like 3-0, you know, back in the day, you're guaranteed playing against like good people at that point.
Yeah, a person that has a tournament finish, right? Yeah, let's just say that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like they've been proven.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're 3-0 back in the day. You're probably playing against tournament winners at that point, right?
Yeah.
Like you have just people that you know that have like, oh yeah, they have huge accomplishments, you know, and you're seeing those people in day one, back in the day. Now it's like, okay, you might go through all of day one and some of day two without encountering more established players, and that's just because of the breadth of the field now and because of all of the new influx of players, which is an incredible thing, but it does have an impact on the tournament run experience. And so then some of that is like, okay, you're playing a deck that maybe you can outplay your opponent. Those kinds of decks feel really good to play in these kinds of fields where you mm-hmm. feel like you're a more experienced player that can leverage your ability level. But then newer players might pick decks that are more hot and cold matchup heavy so that they can leverage their matchups against you, right? Which is like, and that hurts.
Yeah, but I mean, it was really funny too, because that wasn't what happened. Like, it was not that these players knew their decks and were trying and had a bad matchup into my deck. It was just blatant misplays in winning situations or blatant misplays in situations that could have put them in a solid position to win the game, or misplays in like obvious misplays in like a game three situation. It was all just like, well, I can't really,
I'm not gonna lie. I don't know that I've ever had an entire day filled with events like the ones you're describing right now. So,
I had one tournament. And I'm gonna make this analogy. I had one tournament back in when was Hawlucha and Silver Bangle? What was that, like 2014?
Furious Fist.
2015. Okay, 2015. I played this one deck. It was like a rogue deck. It used Hawlucha and Lucario and Fighting Fury, or not Fighting Fury Belt, but the fighting one that puts your guys at 10 if they it was going to be knocked out. What's that one called? Or whatever. Focus Sash and Strong Energy and all this stuff. And I just created this deck and it had Crushing Hammers and I don't know, a bunch of weird stuff.
I created that deck. Yeah, it was my deck.
Okay, anyway, with my deck, with the deck that I created.
Lucario Hammers.
Yeah, the Lucario Hammers deck, yeah, that I created. So, anyway, whatever. I played that deck for the first time, and I played it in Canada at, like, a league challenge or whatever it was back then. And I went undefeated until the last round, and the guy was like, hey, you know, I was 4-0, and he was, like, 3-1. I think I got the down pair, and he's like, hey, man, do you want to, like, ID so that I can get into top four? And I'm like, no, like, I'm just gonna play it out because this deck is so fun. So I go 5-0 through Swiss and then don't drop a game and you know, top cut. Yeah, and it was like the easiest day of, like, I remember it to this day because it was so simple, easy, breezy, matches were amazing, the deck functioned awesome, and it felt like that again here at this tournament, where it was like, I could do no wrong. I had one round that I did lose to an Urshifu and Inteleon, which is just a tough matchup. But I mean, to be frank, they didn't play very well either. And I like told them that after the game, I'm like, you know, just didn't go well for me because I should have leveraged like a different attacker in the situation and I got punished for it. And it's like, I could have easily won that round as well. But yeah, again, quality opponent, very low. Overall, and some of the players, like, again, played well, but overall would love to have more opponents like that in future tournaments.
Excellent. Well, so. I'm excited. Can you get a hold of your microphone?
I know, dude, I need a new mic stand. It's in the mail.
Well, I'm very excited to get into your matchups and talk about your tournament run, but I think that this would be a good time to thank the cast sponsor, Manscaped.
Manscaped is the presenting sponsor of the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast, and we couldn't be more excited. Manscaped has a wide variety of products for any of your men's grooming needs, whether it's the ear and nose hair trimmer, the weed whacker. They have just a lot of electrical devices that will trim hair that you should probably get your hands on. And that I use every single week. So, Andrew, why don't you tell them where they can find Manscaped products and what discount code they can use?
Yes, manscaped.com. You can use code TAGTEAM for, is it 15% off?
This is even better. Higher.
20% off.
20% off.
And Free shipping. That's right, because the year is 2023 and you ain't got to pay for shipping when you're ordering your grooming products. I personally am a big fan of the lawnmower. Helps keep me all nice and trim, and it's got a nifty little light on it so you can see in all those dark places that are not easy to navigate. The lawnmower makes that easy breezy. They also have some great underwear and other products you should definitely check out. Again, manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM to get 20% off and free shipping.
Turn your Alolan Dugtrio into a regular Dugtrio with there Manscaped.
Nailed it.
Yeah, okay, so day one, very simple. Very easy. Again, some opponents played well, but on the whole, like, very bad play, a lot of misplays. Day two, different story. I mean, frankly, like, everyone in day two, there were certainly some matchups that Murata was able to leverage. I think about my round 12 opponent who was playing Arceus. You know, I think about my round 14 opponent who was playing Bexcalibur. Like, those are matchups that I just would expect to win, and they were over fairly quickly and fairly painlessly. But you know, there were a number of opponents in day two where I was just like grinding it out. So in round 10, again, I'm 8-1. In round 10, I play Terrence Miller, who is playing a Lost Box with Radiant Charizard deck. And that's a tough one. It just, there's no real way around it because you can't boat race them like the Lost Zone Box decks where you're trading two prizers. Yeah. They have a one prizer that at the end of the game, like, reasonably can one shot anything that you have. You have to get, like, really lucky with an Iono that they miss a vacuum to vacuum away your Maridon with the bravery charm. Like, that's kind of your one win condition. You have to steal a turn, but it's really hard to do with that deck because they've
path down.
Yeah, you have to get a path down early. Yeah, it's really ugly. So that first game, I think it was the first game I ended up winning, you know, pretty long game one, and then he just smoked me in game two, and then we were coming down to the wire in game three, and I was just able to, time was called, and I was able to finagle a tie because he had attacked with his Radiant Charizard, and then he wasn't able to switch it out, and it just ended up being a tie, and I was just really happy to come away with that, because after you start 8-1, you actually have a fairly large leash in day two.
Yeah.
You can go 4-2 to you know, that would be 36 points. You could go 3-1-2. So a tie after an 8-1 record is very reasonable to take. And so I came out of that, especially against your bad matchups. I'm like, cool. Okay. That's, you know, totally fine. Like, no big deal.
Fine. Yep.
I won one, like, feeling good, especially again, after that great day one performance. So then in round 11, I played against a double Turbo Mew, and this is just a matchup that's very bad for Maridon. I would say it's maybe like 70-30, if not worse. But with them, it's the paths are like, if they go first and they get a turn one path, that's usually the death of you, because we didn't play any way to get around a path, though we played path ourselves. And so, and they always have, well, I say always, but they have a lot of ways to get around path, be it their loss vacuum or flipping heads on a Cram-O-Matic. And what needs to happen in that matchup is they just need to get kind of a slowish start, and then you need to put on a lot of pressure and just overcome them. And that's exactly what happened there. Round 12.
Crazy, bro.
I know. It was, I mean, you have, again, you have to get lucky, right? You have to get lucky. No.
See me on stream getting sauced.
But that's the thing. You were close. Like, if you watch back those stream matches, and there maybe was like a, there was maybe a few things you could have done to, like, maybe increase your percentages a little bit, but, like, overall, like, you were down to the last, last turn there, against your stream matchup. And then in round 10, played an Arceus deck that I won in about 10 minutes, which was really cool, cause I got to just kind of walk around and watch everybody else. That's a big plus of playing Maridon. Round number 13, another bad matchup. So I was playing against Raymond Long, who ended up winning the entire tournament with Lost Box Kyogre. And this is a matchup that I don't like to play it, but I respect the matchup. Like, I think it can be kind of fun. Like, it can be very back and forth. And yeah. The issue with his deck was that he was playing the Zamazenta. And so that was really hard to deal with. And that was different from, right. And that was different from Andrew Estrada's list. Yeah. So he was playing the Zamazenta. And the interesting thing about that is, like, they just need to get a Zamazenta within the first three or four turns. Like, at any point, it could be after you take that first knockout, and then they just go down to four prizes, or at least this was what he tried to do. He just went down to four prizes, like, pretty much immediately. As soon as he got the combo up, he just did it. And then beyond that, you know, you don't even have to set up like Sableye. You don't have to set up really anything. You're just going for Kyogre, and you have maybe, you maybe have two, three, four turns potentially to get there. And so that's kind of what happened. Game one, I won a really long game one again. And well, I say long, but it was maybe like 20, 25 minutes. So I'm like, okay, there's no way that
you just got done telling me this matchup's tough. How did you?
Yeah, it's really hard. Well, it's a lot of this like little stuff. It's like getting a path on their Greninja. And then he had to make a play where he had to load up a Kyogre before he could attack with it. And he like, I think it was like, he had to load it up and then he had to poke a stop and then he needed a switch card and he missed a switch card, or it was something like that, where he like had to get a Kyogre up, but he didn't have a way. He had to power it up before he got it active, before he had a guaranteed way to get it active.
He has to get the energy out and onto the thing. Then
right. It was like something like that, where it was like kind of awkward for him. And I just remembered that's how I won, where it was like, okay, I boss up the Kyogre and take a knockout. And then, just kind of falls apart from there. And so that was about 20, 25 minutes. And I'm like, okay, we can probably finish a game two. and I'll just kind of see where I feel after, you know, we'll play this out just because, again, a tie in this matchup, I'm taking that 99% of the time, because that would mean that I just have to win one of my last two rounds to make 35 points, which would put me on the bubble for top eight. So I'm cool with the tie. It's kind of funny because I scoop with about 10 minutes left, because I'm like, okay, if I go, I'm going to choose to go second in game three and maybe I can get a donk.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because I almost do. And he's stuck, like his first turn, I think he goes Zamazenta attach pass with no bench Pokemon. And it forces me to get a Maridon, because the Zamazenta, you can't Raikou it because it has 160 and he had no bench. And I just like, I miss the Maridon, which is fine. And he like draws and he like gets a Pokestop and he plays the Pokestop and he gets one Nest Ball And it was just like that little bit. And he was able to like eventually stabilize, but I had taken three prizes at that point. Like I would have won that game probably. But you know, I was very happy with the tie, because that's the thing with bad matchups in this format too, is like, if you can come out of them with a tie, like this is a bad matchup. This is a very bad matchup in no world.
Nah, bro, you're winning it, dude. You could have won the event, dog. Like, yeah, look at you. You were a couple turns away from walking away with the fatty dub. Who cares?
Well, in that situation, it didn't make sense to try to go for the win. So
yeah.
I tied Raymond, and really great series, really fun. And then round 14, I just need to win either 14 or 15. So I'm like, cool, I'm chilling. I'm seeing a lot of good matchups. I'm seeing the Maridons. I'm seeing, you know, some Arceus up there. I'm seeing Charizard decks, which I don't necessarily love the face, but like wouldn't be the end of the world. And I get paired against a Bax Caliber, which was awesome. I take game one, he takes game two, and then we come down to a game three and it just gets really funky. And I'm able to secure the win there. So I come in, I'm like, okay, 35 points. It's cool. Like I'm on the bubble either way. You know, just maybe ID the last round or whatever. Play against Rowan. Rowan, I think has, if I go back and look at the numbers, I think he had the wrong mindset here. So we end up playing it out. And I think that was actually incorrect from him, but I understand where he's coming from. So we sit down, I'm like,
play you so that he could get a higher seed and you would get a lower seed so that he might play you in top eight.
Right? So we were at table one, which is important to describing why he might have had the wrong idea here. We were playing at table one and he had, I believe at this point, he had the most points in the tournament because he was at table one and I was playing him. I was playing him because he had played the other two higher, players. So, so I was thinking, you know, just ID, like, I don't want to go through the mental like gymnastics of playing this matchup because it's kind of tough and I'm going to like try to win because I'm on the bubble. So I told him, you know, I had that dog in me and I tried to play the matchup out, but I think that, you know, he won pretty easily. Like, again, this is a tough matchup and, just something where you like have to really hit generators to be able to like Raichu a bunch or turn one attack and like get knockouts every turn. Like it's just really tough.
You're going to Iono path you to like two and you need boss.
Yeah. He just judged me. Like sometimes it wasn't even with path and I just drew into like absolutely unplayable hands and you know, whatever. And that happens. But I think he was a little bit in the wrong, cause he had the highest point total. I think it was at, I don't know what his point total at top eight was, but he was the highest seed. I think it was 37 points because he had kind of mowed through the field. Yeah, he's, let's see, he would have been 12-2 at that point, right? 36. So he had 36 points and ID. He would have been one of the higher seeds. I think it would have been more likely for him to hit me. He might have probably still got one seed. And I think he wanted to ID with me because if he had gotten the one seed, then I would have likely been 4 or 5 with an extra point, and then he would have hit me in the second round. What ended up happening was we played it out. I lost. He got the top seed. I was 6th seed, so I was on the other side of the bracket, which, and he knew that my resistance was good, so I was going to be one of the higher 35 points. So again, like it was a little bit of, I think it was a miscalculation on his part for not taking the ID, but it ultimately didn't matter because I knew that my resistance was insane, right? Like I had dropped one game throughout the course of the tournament and, you know, and all my day two, and I had won or tied everything in day two. So I lose to Rowan and I get my deck taken for top eight, and they do a deck check.
And this is where things get interesting.
They get a little spicy. So turns out I get a call.
That 5 a.m. staring at the ceiling, changing up the deck, maybe.
maybe was good in some ways. But so I get a call to the deck check stand. And yes. They say, JW, we have an issue. And I say, oh, what's that? I'm thinking it's probably a sleeve thing because, you know, I have never once before in a decade plus of playing, not one time, in a regional have had a deckless deer. Not one time. And they say, here's the deal. You had certain cards written on your deck list that you did not have in your physical deck. And turns out I had on my deck list to Beach Court, which was copied from the Pittsburgh list because I just copied pasted the Pittsburgh list and then modified it.
You got lazy.
I did. No, I 100% did. And I had
back in the day, bro, you had to handwrite deck lists. There was never the copy of the convenience.
Well, but that's actually the thing is like in the modern day, I actually make it a point not to copy paste for that exact reason so that I don't like, except for this time. No, I mean, yeah, seriously. So then, the judge explains that I have Beach Court and I had been playing with Escape Rope.
Yeah,
and
two beach court for two escape rope.
The judge deemed that these cards like reasonably could have just it was not they deemed it as not being malicious. Certainly, they could have taken it to a DQ.
They could have, but I think what you have going in your favor is that nobody in their right noggin is playing five stadiums.
Like, well, and that's the other thing, right? It's like it's not necessarily good. Yeah, it's not necessarily good, and it puts me in most matchups and like most of the time it puts me at a disadvantage. So ultimately they de-escalated, or I don't know what like the official ruling would be, but they said, okay, we're gonna give you a game loss in top eight. It could have been a double game loss, could have been a DQ, I suppose, but they gave me a game loss in top eight and they made me switch out the cards that I had been playing with the cards that were in my actual deck list. So I walk into top eight in a Marad on Mirror against Jesse with an inferior list. In my opinion, it turns out that potentially the Beach Courts could be a little bit better because if Jesse paths turn one, then now I have an out to path. And that, I don't know.
You
don't
have no rope. Like,
I know, but I also have no rope, right? So it's like there's pluses and minuses. Like I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. So anyway, I smoked Jesse in two games. Long story short.
I know. I called you before this, and I was like, all right, you're in top eight. Let's go. And you're like, yeah, well, here's the deal. You know, I'm going in with a one loss.
Well, no, it was so funny because – this is how the conversation actually went.
Yeah.
You call me and you're like, oh man, I'm so sorry about what happened. And I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, what happened? I'm like, oh, you, the decklist error. He's like, no, man, I heard from the local guys, like, you lost to Rowan in the last round. I'm like, dude, it's no big deal. I've only lost twice this entire tournament. Like, it's going to be chill. And then you're like, what's the decklist error? And then I explained to you about the Beach Courts and the escape ropes. And you're like, oh, shoot.
Yep.
But it's kind of funny because I think, that does give me like maybe a little bit of an advantage in the Marad on Mirror. It ended up not really mattering because I still think like if you
threw like a potato.
Game one, I don't want to say I outplayed him, but like I went first. So I went first and I just did everything that I needed to do in the Marad on Mirror. If you're playing well, which really none of my opponents in this tournament or in Pittsburgh in the mirror have played particularly well. And that like, I don't know that maybe I should put a YouTube video out or something, but
I feel like Marad on, no, don't. Yeah. Don't, no.
Don't do that. Don't teach people.
Abort. But no, I feel like I'm extremely. I don't think I've lost a ride on mirror. The mirrors have not been bothering.
Yeah, the mirrors have been really free for sure. Yeah, but if you go first against two comparable Maridon players, like you should win most of the time. And so that's what happened. Yeah. Because when you lose a game off of a judge call, like if you get a game loss, then you are allowed to select. And against the path version, you like in the mirror, if they're both playing path, then you always want to go first because you need to get out from, you need to get out from under the path with your own Maridon, and then you need to path your opponent.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And then in game two, Jesse goes, he like looks at his hand and I'm like, what's this dude debating on? He has an active Zapdos and nothing else. And he goes, attach, bravery charm, pass, I think. Oh no, he plays a path. He plays a path as well.
Yeah. It's about to get grindy.
Yeah. It gets really grindy. So on my turn, I have the opportunity. I start the Mew, I believe. And I have the opportunity to, and I like have Maridon in hand and like a Raichu in hand as well. I have the opportunity to potentially hit a generator. Like I get Arvin, so I get a generator and the stone. And I'm like, okay, I have the chance to go for the donk. Cause maybe he has a supporter in his hand. Like maybe he can get stabilized after this. So I'm like, okay, I'm thinking in my head, like, okay, Arvin for stone and generator. If I hit one off the generator, then I am stoning for the other generator. And I'm going back in and I'm like, you just have to play. Like I have maintained this with this archetype that you try to win the game again, like as fast as you possibly can.
Oh yeah.
You
extend for the donk. Yeah.
You make those plays. You just make those plays. And that's like, that's the contract that you sign when you play Maridon.
It is. You're like, I'm in. Yep. I'm in. I'm going for it.
I'm in 100%. And I already know like before the tournament starts that if I ever get in these situations, like I am going for it. So I say, okay, if I get one off the first generator or obviously two, like then if I get two, I win instantly. Cause I can just grab the energy off of the stone. If I get one, then we're going to go for it. And I end up hitting zero, which may be like good in the end because ultimately I can like, if I had hit one off the first generator and then I had stoned for another generator and hit zero, I would have put myself in a really awkward spot. But, I get the one, I put it, on my Raichu and then I fast charge and I get a little extra energy in play. And then just from there, like I stabilized maybe the best board that I've had throughout the entirety of the tournament where I get both Flaffy up. I have like two Raichu on the field. You know, I have both my charms down, like
energy in play, you're chilling.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like it was basically turn two where I just knew it was an unlosable board position for me, even without escape ropes. That's the thing, is I got up by three prizes after turn three with two Flaffy down, and I don't play escape rope. So after you take three prizes, it doesn't matter because the Maridon player doesn't have a way to like snipe anything. So if he were to gust up a Flaffy, I could just retreat it, or I could just like let it sit up there for the entirety of the game. Like it literally doesn't matter because he has to go through that Flaffy. So I have all the time in the world to formulate a plan around it after I go up by three prizes. So Jesse was a little upset, a little sad. I mean, to be expected, right? Like,
man, he just got in the finals, bro. He's chilling.
Well, and it's kind of funny, too, because I don't know that he told me this, but I wonder if he's thinking this. And I've had players like this where you just can't seem to beat them on any stage. Like, going back to last season, we played in the finals of a League Cup. And I won 2-0. And it was kind of like a miraculous miracle 4-tablet Mew knockout, like just unbelievable kind of finish to that game.
Are you saying you've got Jesse's number even when you're down game one?
Well, right. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, here, how can I make it like as possible for you to win? And this was it, right? This was like of all the times that we played, which is, maybe half a dozen at this point. This was his time. And he just drew like a potato in game two or game
three, technically.
And, I feel for that. Cause I've been in that situation with other players where you just can't seem to beat them. So that's frustrating. And then
have that time. There's going to be that time, bro.
It's glorious. It's going to be fun. Uh-huh. And then the finals. Yeah. I mean that matchup,
top four.
No, yeah. My final round, that was not a good display of what the deck could do.
I was watching you.
Yeah, it was.
And turn two of game two, I had to turn it off.
I couldn't
watch.
Yeah, no, it just went really. Yeah, it just went really bad. Well, I mean, even game one, like, I knew I had thrown game one. Like, I Arvind for the tool and no item.
What did you do, bro? I was like, he Arvind and only got one thing. And then I think you did, like, a one overhand. You're like, oh, and then you didn't get anything. And I was like, they must have told him.
Yep, the judge was like, oh, you're shuffling, so you can't go back into the deck. And it's like, okay, like, I guess, you know. And it was at that point that I knew, like, okay, like, I'm, you know, again, bad matchup. He had, yeah, I'm out of here. And so, yeah, that was just, I'm really disappointed in the performance just because, you know, I think, again, it like kind of adds to the stigma, like, oh, the, you know, the Maraidon player, like, oh, this is the quality of a player that plays Maraidon. It's like, he has no idea, like, what he's doing. Right. Well, and it's,
we have Jesse in Pittsburgh who, like,
yes. Yes.
Died of odor before he retreats. And now we have you who Arvind's for just a brand.
Yeah. It was just really disappointing. And, you know, I know. And it was really funny because these were not the hands that I had been getting throughout the entirety of the tournament. Like,
no, they were
the hands
I had. Okay. They were my hands.
Yeah. I got the curse of Andrew hands.
Yeah. I was like, he's watching you in top four. I'm like, yeah, that's what I was getting right there.
Yeah. So I haven't watched that matchup back, and I don't know if I really want to. Just again, like, a little bit of an embarrassing final round for me, and you know, and you kind of,
yeah, it feels bad, right?
Yeah, and it's fine. Again, I'm like really proud of the tournament because I had played, you know, in my opinion, again, didn't show it on the stream, but in my opinion, played very well throughout the entirety of the tournament, like very tight play. But you get up on that stage, and I had waited, you know, maybe 45 minutes to play that round. Like, you're kind of cold and you're in a new environment, and you know, I don't want to give myself excuses.
It's very loud.
It's very loud. And like, yeah, you just, you know, I said this like on the stage, I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm having an out of body experience. Like, you're just playing a certain way. And then, you know, throughout 16 rounds, and then the last round you're like thrust up on the stage in this new environment, and like, I like to play opposite handed, and like, that doesn't, you know, it's just like all this weird stuff, and it's, yeah, really annoying. So no excuse there, played pretty bad, and I'll own up to that. But I think the most disappointing thing was that it, again, like, added to the stigma. Like, I really would like to have controlled the narrative, even if I had lost. Like, I would have liked to have
controlled the narrative, bro. We want good players to not respect us or Maraidon.
So no, true.
You are working the script just right, baby. Yes, yes, yes. It's all part of the greater narrative.
Uh-huh.
That this deck stinks.
Yeah, it's a 4D chess move, without a doubt.
Yes,
so
yeah, it's all part of the master plan.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, really unfortunate. I mean, that matchup was going to be tough anyway, but just the way that it unfolded was, you know, not my finest performance, and I'll own up to that and say, you know what, on to the next one, and you know, just own it.
Short term memory, and that's what I was saying. You know, you got to have short term memory with some things. You got to be able to brush off the, you know, the stuff like that. One game on stream certainly doesn't define you as a player, and obviously,
totally.
You performed extremely well to be able to make it to the stage. And also, I'm just so proud of you that you were able to get up there, get a great finish, $5,000, a medal. Dang, I ain't got one of those medals yet, bro. Like,
not yet.
Not yet, baby. But I've got my eyes on one, though.
I know you do. I'll let you look at mine.
Just a matter of time. Jesse let me touch his, actually.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Actually, he brought it on to stream. When I had him featured, he brought it with him. Yeah, bro. Like, he brought it with him. Yeah. Well, you know, which is funny, but also was the first time I'd ever held one in my hand. So, like, I'm like, I can't actually be mad. I know. The trophies tough. From back in the day, the medals are nicer than the trophies from back in the day, I think.
Yeah, I think overall, yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of nostalgia for those acrylic clear trophies, but it's nice to have some color. I think these are pretty nice for our modern day. So yeah, that was the tournament run. I feel like it was just a really strong tournament. Really liked the deck and how it performed. Again, I didn't like my performance in round 17 in that semifinal match, but other than that, just one of the better tournament runs that I've had.
For sure, and you should definitely be proud of that. Now, what is next for you, JW, now that we have completed the first two regionals of the year? What do you got your sights on next?
So I'm sitting at 170 points from regionals, which is a good spot to be at, I feel like, from regional finishes. I think I'm only going to be able to make it to, you know, maybe five regionals, six regionals, right? So I need to like really maximize the regionals that I can make it to. My goal, my like real like stretch goal was like, okay, if I can hit 300 points from regionals, or like 250, 300 points from regionals, then like there's a realistic shot that I have, you know, that I can make a world's invite at the 600 point threshold. And so we're right there, you know. I could get, you know, a number of, you know, 50 point finishes at regionals, or I could get another big spike and that'd be great. And then close it out with local finishes. So it's looking good in that regard. In terms of tournaments that I'll be attending, I will be at Toronto Regionals. That will be the next one that I will be attending, and then have to try to figure it out between like San Antonio, I think is in December sometime. I won't be attending LAIC. Those are the big ones. Like getting out to the internationals is really important, especially for us this year. And it makes me really want to go to London, because that would, you know, again, like if we talk about the likelihood. Yeah.
I mean, it's chump change points compared to the Nat.
You kind of just have to show up to an international and you'll get, you know, 50 points. And so it really makes me think like, okay, this was a good finish. Like I'm on a good trajectory. If I do want to pursue this, probably makes sense to try to hit up one other international that's outside of the United States. So, you know, maybe London's in the future, but I still have to confirm that with my wife.
Now for me, I have like I'm feeling a sense of contentment this year with Japan being like the experience that it was. I mean, I feel like it was like the world's experience that I kind of always wanted. I had a solid finish. I got to spend time with my family, you know, my mom and dad, Natalie, friends. And it was just so amazing. And being a player who's been in the game for over a decade, at some point, I feel like the stress of chasing the world's invite has to move away to other things. And I feel like this year, more so than any other year in the past, the world's invite is not the only thing worth chasing when being a competitive player. And I'm going to take advantage of that this year. I'm not going to spend every free weekend that I have going to locals to try and like piece together, 600 points. I'm just not. I'm going to go to a good amount of events. And if I end up getting the world's invite, great. But for me, my goal this year is not a world's invite. My goal this year is going to be to earn a trophy at a regional or a national tournament. And I am going to LAIC. I'm not going to Toronto. Why? Because I'm hosting a Halloween party instead. And I would rather do that. So that's something that I'm taking, like, I'm going to spend personal time with friends and doing something at my house and not skipping one of my favorite holidays to go do Pokemon. Like I'm prioritizing that.
Sure.
This year, which is not something that I might have done in the past. In the past, I would have chosen to go like 100%. I'm going to Toronto. It's drivable regional. I'm going. So I'm not sacrificing those social situations this year in pursuit of the invite. For me, I'm thinking about the game more organically now. I'm just like, you know, it every event is an opportunity to win a lot of money. Every event is an opportunity to prove yourself as a player and win a fabulous prize, a trophy, and all of that. Every event, regional and higher, is a multi, like, is a $1 million production from TPCI, where, you know, you have an opportunity to play on stage with the lights and the cameras and the production. I mean, it really is. Every single event is something special. And I really feel that now. And I, for me, it's like, yeah, I just went to Worlds. Like, yeah, I could take a work. I could take a year off, and, you know, but, I'm old man. I'm 34. Like, if I don't go to Worlds this year, like, what? I'll get the next year.
But don't you want to go to Hawaii?
I just went to Hawaii for my honeemoon. Like, literally,
that's fair. That's fair.
Like, literally the year before, I was just in, like, the world's location's not even enticing. I was just there. Like, that's
yeah. I don't need to go back. Yeah.
I mean, well, so for me, like, LAIC is more exciting. I've never been either.
Yep.
So then it's like, I've never been to South America. Yep. So, like, yeah, I'm going to go there. So I'm kind of thinking about the season as more piecemeal like that. Like, okay, just like whatever excites me, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, totally.
Going to a League Cup or a League Challenge on my free weekend, that's not exciting me as a person right now. So, like, right. I'm probably going to skip those and just test and work on my stuff for my channel and then go to the big events and try to spike one.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And I think that makes sense. Like, we all have just different priorities, and I think that's a really healthy way to look at things. And I think there are some people that, you know, are like, I'm gonna go to every event and I'm gonna grind, and, you know, I hate to see people like that flame out because they have the best intentions, and, you know, if it doesn't work out, then that can be really crushing. So it's just good to do what you need to do. And, you know, obviously I have a fire right now. Jesse has a fire.
My man, you need a world to finish, so I get it.
Hey, that's true. I mean, this is the year, though. Like, this is, if we talk about years to get world's finishes, like, we're all basically on the same playing field.
Right? There's no auto date, you don't have to grind through
it. Yeah.
Anymore.
So, I mean, if there was ever a year for little old me,
to win
a world's, it's probably this year.
Right. So. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, is there anything that you want to send us off with, JW? I think it's been a really good discussion about your tournament run, a really good discussion about the season. We've got Toronto coming up for you. Neither of us are going to Sacramento. LAIC coming up for me. Any final notes before we close off the cast?
Well, I just want to shout out Jesse again for a couple of day twos, a couple of top eights. And yeah, we've been testing a lot. So it's just really great to see his work and our work come to fruition over the course of the first couple regionals of the season. So I just want to give Jesse a major shout out in the work that he's done. And it's been just really cool to, you know, partner along with him in that.
100%. Well, I think that is great. Well, thank you all so much for listening and watching. Again, you can find Tag Team Podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music, and of course hosted on the Tricky Gym YouTube channel as well. And if you would like to follow us on the platform X, formerly known as Twitter, you can find JW at Real John Walter, right? Is it the?
That's right. No, just Real John Walter.
Just at Real John Walter.
Yeah.
And you can find me at Enjoyfriend, ENJOI friend on X. That'll do it for the cast.
Thank you guys all so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.